Hi, this is Rick Emerson, and the following encore of Legion of News is brought to you by Squires Electric. Whether it's electrical wiring, Ethernet wiring, or wiring of any kind at all in your home or business, Squires Electric can make your life easier. Find out more at squireselectric.com or call 503-252-1609. Squires Electric.
Greetings, fellow Portlanders. From the Emerson News Network, this is Legion of News!
High atop the Milkpacking District in the heart of beautiful southeast Portland, Oregon. This, my friends, is Legion of News, a one-hour distillation of all important knowledge from everywhere. My name is Rick Emerson alongside Dawn Taylor, who is, even now as I speak these words to you, bearing information on a vast swath of happenings, including, but not limited to, the following.
A man with a knife climbs into a Portland teenager's bedroom window. A dog walker is critically injured near Sandy. And ladies, your dating chances just got better. California's letting a whole lot of guys out of prison.
As always, my friends, have no doubt that this conglomeration of factual discourse and ideological screed will render you shocked, amazed, enraptured, and demonstrably more intelligent than when you began this hour. And now, without further ado, steel yourselves for this. This is Legion of News.
Good afternoon. I'm Dawn Taylor, and this is absolutely everything you need to know for May 24th, 2011. A 14-year-old girl was attacked early this morning by a man who climbed through a window in her apartment. The girl told police she was able to fend off the attacker, who had a knife. He leapt through the same window, she told police. The stranger-to-stranger attack took place about 4:20 a.m., on Southeast Cherry Blossom Drive. The girl's parents were also in the apartment. There were no injuries. The suspect is described as a man in his 40s, possibly white or Latino, wearing dark clothing and some kind of mask. He remains at large. A canine officer did not locate the suspect. Criminologists and detectives were sent to the apartment as part of the investigation. Former Portland City Commissioner has become the first major candidate to announce he's running for mayor in the upcoming election. Charlie Hales made the announcement yesterday. He said, "I think a lot of people, me included, are frustrated that we're spending a lot of time in process and talking about things and that we're just not getting enough done." During his time as commissioner, Hales has helped create the Airport Max Line and was a big supporter of Portland's streetcar project. He left office in 2002, 2 years before his term was up, to work for a private engineering consulting firm.
So he's getting things done. It's just about half of them are things we don't want.
Right.
Okay. Well, you
know. He got a whole lot of stuff that we find annoying and unnecessary and expensive.
I have to say, you know, if he was a Major League Baseball player, though, he would be an all-star with that average. So, you know, Godspeed to you, whatever your name was. Matt Hales?
Charlie Hales,
yes.
I love it, though, when politicians complain that, you know, other politicians are spending too much time, you know, in process, you know, talking to people and not getting stuff done. Because the implication then is that they will become mayor and then they're just not going to ask anybody's advice and they're just going to do stuff.
Well, that's how I would do it, to be fair. I mean, really, to be honest, I would just act rashly and with no intention of forethought. I would have no purpose or overriding goal. I would have no mission statement. I would have no master plan. I would just go on every day and I would spin a huge wheel. And wherever it landed, it'd be like the Skillo wheel. But it would just be sort of a wheel of graft and pork. which is, you know, not too dissimilar from how I live my life now. So I'm pretty much all set. You're listening to Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. Thank you for joining us. It is Tuesday, May 24th, 2011. If you want to get this program later on today, and I know you do, you can get it via iTunes or as a direct MP3 download here at Cascadia.fm or at legionofnews.com. Coming up later on this hour, you get your Science on the March, also your entertainment news, and next hour at rickemersonshow.com, the Rick Emerson radio program, which will be filling your ear holes with tasty amusement and knowledge. That is next hour at rickemersonshow.com. You can also take this program with you on the road if you like, as your with your mobile device or your smartphone or your handheld or your what have you. That is mobile.cascadia.fm, mobile.cascadia.fm. Here is Don Taylor.
The Supreme Court on Monday ordered California to reduce its inmate population by roughly a quarter over the next 2 years in a bid to relieve deadly overcrowding in the state's prison system. The ruling represents one of the largest prison release orders in the nation's history and will force California to release tens of thousands of prisoners, according to the Los Angeles Times. The court ruled in a 5-4 decision that the reduction is required under the Constitution to fix longstanding violations of prisoners' rights. The order caps the size of the state's prison population at 110,000 inmates. The number is still far above the system's designated capacity, according to the Associated Press, but is well below the 143,000 inmates that were in the state's 33 adult prisons as of May 11th.
So we're just going to be getting rid of a lot of guys. We're just going to be kicking them out.
Yeah. Donald Spector, he is the lead attorney representing the prisoners in the case, and he disputes Justice Samuel Alito's concern that this could create, you know, a mass release of inmates.
The prison gates aren't going to open and 30,000 prisoners aren't going to walk out tomorrow. That's just not going to happen.
Spector says the state's prisons have been filled to the brim for decades.
The prisoners are unsafe. The guards who work there are unsafe. The public is unsafe because there's no rehabilitation occurring in the prisons.
Well, it sounds like some futuristic hyper-violent game show is the only way we're going to get out of this problem.
Oh, I like that.
Yes. That's what the first thing I'm going to do is mayor, by the way. See, you scoffed at an Emerson mayoral run. But who laughs now, Don Taylor?
Now we're going to have Running Man.
That's right.
That's awesome. Spector says some inmates may be moved to county jails under recently passed legislation.
They have a lot of capacity. Some of them are overcrowded, but many of them have space. And the counties have been managing their jail populations for years.
Let me understand. So the county jails, which are working well because they're not overcrowded, are now just going to take all of the overflow from the prisons,
right,
thus making sure that everything is equally crowded.
Yes.
Okay, that's fantastic.
Yeah, the order upholds a 2009 decision from a special judicial panel that ruled that inmates in California prisons were being denied adequate medical care as required by the Constitution. Because the panel found that overcrowding was the primary factor, it ordered the state to cap its prison population at a mere 137% of capacity.
This is great. So we're actually so opposed to giving medical care in this country that we will release prisoners just sort of willy-nilly rather than actually provide for someone's medical well-being. That is, you really have to hand it to us because we are ideologically invested. We don't just give lip service to denying health care to people. We follow through even if it means that prisons just have to be either A, yes, 137% of capacity, or B, just, you know, setting guys out.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I guess my thing is I don't think they understand the point of solving the problem of overcrowding if their cap is 137% of capacity.
Yes, it seems like the first thing they need to uncap is the limit of people who go into math classes in California. So, all right. You're listening to Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. Thank you for joining us. Coming up later in this hour, Science on the March, also your entertainment news. And next hour at the Rick Emerson Show, we have a clergy watch coming up, also a religious nutcase watch, and we'll do a recap of last night's season finale of House. Here is Don Taylor.
Oregon State Police say a woman who was walking her dog on Highway 211 south of Sandy was struck Monday afternoon by a pickup truck driven by a 15-year-old. The 19-year-old woman, Stevie Ray Irwin of Sandy, was taken to Legacy Emmanuel Medical Center in critical condition. Police say the 15-year-old driver, Neil Bieri of Sandy, has a provisional instruction permit. He was coming around a curve when he came upon the woman on the highway. The dog ran off after the crash, but was found and treated by a veterinarian.
Wait, so this wasn't on Sandy Boulevard. This is actually in Sandy.
In Sandy,
okay.
The city of Sandy.
Now, we have many dog walkers who are listeners to Legion of News and the Rick Emerson Show. So what was her name? Stevie Ray Irwin?
Stevie Ray Irwin.
Doesn't sound familiar, but I mean, there is sort of an international you know, sisterhood and legion of dog walkers. So, you know, who knows? It's entirely possible that that's a listener of ours. So we have to, is she okay? Or do we have the,
She's in critical condition.
Okay. So, well, not dead.
Not dead.
So that's, you know, I mean, that's still in the, like, if you're grading pass fail, that's still one in the win column.
So our thoughts go out to the woman who was just walking her dog, minding her own business.
But what is with the 15-year-old guy who's driving the car? What is that about? What's the backstory there?
He has a provisional permit, and I think that means that you can drive during daylight hours.
As long as it's recklessly?
Without anybody in the car or something. I don't know.
Well, what kind of goddamn nonsense is that? Since when do we, I say, turning into an old person, since when do we just start allowing hooligans and ne'er-do-wells just to be helter-skelter behind the wheel of a car, now all higgledy-piggledy, rat-a-tat-tat?
Now, he was coming around a curve. You don't know. Just because the woman had a dog does not mean that she was in the right. She could have been, like, actually walking in the road or something.
I'm just saying 15 seems, I'm not saying it's ideologically, like, I'm morally opposed to it. I'm just saying that seems legally too young. I thought it was 15 and a half, and I thought you had to have an adult with you.
Well, maybe he is 15 and a half.
Was there an adult in the car?
It says 15 years old. I don't know.
All right. I'm trying to find a way to exonerate the dog walker before the fact.
Yeah, that's true. Right. But the dog, apparently the dog's okay.
Like, he's probably just some saggy pants-wearing little bastard. You know it's true.
Well, yeah, that's probably true.
All right.
A flood warning has been issued for the Columbia River in the Portland metro area starting this afternoon.
Right, real quickly. Did we give out the name of the guy who hit her?
Neil A. Bieri.
Neil A. Bieri. That's the name of the Ute. Who was behind the wheel.
The baggy pants hooligan.
All right.
Or so we believe. The alleged baggy pants hooligan.
I'm just saying that would be the artist rendering in my head. if you were to ask me to play word association, to say, you know, what sort of image comes up, it is just some spotty-faced ne'er-do-well.
He's wearing a sideways trucker cap.
Exactly.
Yeah.
As Mr. Rabbit would say in the Commitments, some snotty-nosed young fellow with a mouth organ.
So a flood warning has been issued for the Columbia River in the Portland metro area starting this afternoon. As of 8 a.m. Tuesday, the river was 0.1 foot away from flood stage.
Wait, why don't you just give inches? God damn it. Why does everything have to be so difficult to understand?
What is 0.1 foot?
What is the point? Here's what 0.1 foot is. Who wrote that? I demand to know.
This is from KPTV. So we should blame meteorologist Mark Nelson.
Okay, now I have to be nice to KPTV because they were nice to me last week. I'm just going to say this. Look, here's just a little constructive criticism. Just colleague.
Oh, I'm sorry. This is officials with the National Weather Service.
Okay,
who gave
so they're
number.
Just so, reporting so it's them. What the state actually said
the Weather Service gave 0.1.
Is it the
feet.
State Weather Service or the National?
National
okay,
weather
so
service.
Here's you sons of bitches. Here's the thing. What is the point of saying 0.1? Why would you give a decimal, which you are then combining with standard measurement? 0.1 feet.
Yeah.
Why would you not? I mean,
so that would be what? Like 10% of a foot?
Well, 0.1 would be 0.01. It'd be 0.12 inches.
Okay.
Because a foot is 12 inches, this is 0.1. I believe it would be.
Oh, yeah, okay.
I believe it would be 0.12 inches. But my.
Math is hard.
But my thing is, it's like you're either using standard measurement or you're using the metric system.
Yeah.
And instead, they're just doing this, like, Hobson's choice of the two, where they. I mean, for the love of God. I mean, if we're just going to callously disregard the rest of the world's wishes in terms of how we measure things, can we at least be consistent in our refusal to follow the metric system and not just stick it in like some sort of a mathematical appendix?
Well, anyway, the Columbia River is expected to rise above the flood stage around noon. So,
all right.
So right around now,
so, you know,
basically.
Run for your lives or whatever.
No homes are supposed to get flooded because it's a river level of 16 to 17 feet. Mark Nelson of Fox 12 said no homes would get flooded, but some paths, park benches, and farmland get inundated.
See, somebody's saying that's an eighth of an inch. How hard would it have been to say an eighth of an inch? I know what that is.
I don't know.
All right.
Maybe that just doesn't sound scary enough.
By saying a tenth of a foot?
I don't know.
All right.
See, I was right. It was a tenth of a foot.
Right.
And I know nothing about math, but I knew that. I feel proud of myself.
Hurrah.
Yay. I got something right.
Okay.
A Salt Lake City woman has been charged with offering her 13-year-old daughter's virginity to a man for $10,000. The 32-year-old woman was charged Monday in Utah's 3rd District Court with two first-degree felony counts of aggravated sex abuse of a child and two second-degree felony counts of sexual exploitation of a minor. If convicted, she faces a lifetime prison sentence for each first-degree felony. In court papers, prosecutors alleged that the woman had discussed letting her daughter perform oral sex and other sex acts with an adult male. The negotiated offer and an arrangement to exchange the teen's virginity for money were detailed in a string of text messages, which were seen by the woman's boyfriend. In a police affidavit also filed with court, investigators say the woman acknowledged the agreement and said she and the girl had been modeling lingerie for the man in a local store and at their home near the Utah State Capitol.
God.
Investigators say the woman said she had also taken pictures of her daughter wearing only a bra and a skimpy thong underwear and sent them to another adult male. In the same affidavit, the girl told police she initially agreed to the sex for money arrangement, but later told her mother that she didn't actually want to go through with it. The police are not naming the woman to avoid identifying the daughter.
So this is, but so the boyfriend wasn't part of this. He's the one who said, "Hey, now."
Yeah.
What are these text messages?
Apparently so.
All right.
So what's all this about? Whoa.
What's this $10,000 business? And then he saw the thing, and then the hey and the okay, all right. The thing is,
I would imagine in Salt Lake City, this would be I don't know. It could go either way. It could be an especially heinous crime. Or they might go, really, you're not supposed to take money. You're supposed to marry them to some old
man.
Yeah,
I was going to say, you know, that's really the problem here, is that you're tainting the will of God by asking for cash for that, when really it's for five of your finest oxen and also a promise to help with next year's harvest. So there you go. And then you have to have a really long Merlin Olsen-esque beard, and then you're good to go.
A new report shows that new home sales went up for the second straight month in April. Still, the pace of construction is weak, but Mike Larson with Weiss Research says they'll take what they can get.
This is what?
Homes.
Homes. Excuse me, homes?
We also had a continued shrinkage in the amount of supply on the market. So that is something. It's better than nothing in a market that could really use some good news.
Larson says they're waiting for shadow inventory of existing homes to clear its way through the market.
What is shadow inventory?
I don't know. I don't know how that is different than just inventory. Because basically, well, let's hear what he has to say first.
Until you work down that excess supply, there's not going to be any reason for new home builders to ramp up construction or construction hiring.
Shadow inventory sounds like some sort of a... shadow inventory sounds like a thing that Scientologists would have to clear you of.
Yeah, I'm not sure that that's something that actually needs a special term.
No,
he's saying is, you know...
That's just houses nobody's living in.
Yeah, we have a whole lot of houses because people couldn't afford them anymore. They were either foreclosed on or people sold them because they couldn't afford them anymore. So we have a whole lot of existing homes for sale at very reasonable prices, so people don't need to build new ones.
Yeah, it's, you know, if you have a bunch of unsold loaves of Oro wheat, it's not like you have shadow bread.
Yeah.
It's just bread that nobody's purchased yet.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's just stupid. That's like when, what's his name, Ian Faith is talking about the band's appeal becoming more selective. That's totally what the shadow inventory thing is. That's just crap they built thinking that they were going to be able to unload it on foolish Americans, which, I mean, to be fair, they probably would have. I mean, if it hadn't been for those pesky laws and so forth that were enacted to prevent that sort of thing, they probably could have just shoveled those houses out onto people. But let's not make up brand new terms to describe things.
But it's not even that. It's also just the fact that there are a lot of existing homes 5, 10, 20, 30 years old that people did own, but they can't actually afford to own anymore, and no one is buying them.
Well, that's true.
So, you know, new home building is kind of not really necessary right now.
Well, and also we've reached that weird, like, late stage in the Atari video game empire stage where I think we're actually manufacturing more houses than there are people to live in them.
Well, yeah.
Like, I think we're just sort of beavers. Like, we just can't quit. Like, we just sort of, you know, what are you doing? Well, we're building homes. And then we're building factories to churn out cars that nobody will buy. And then also we're importing televisions that no one can afford to purchase anymore. And just because we just don't know how to stop. That's just really all we know how to do.
Always done it.
Right. We just make crap and then we sell it at a vastly inflated price. That really is our only skill in this country. And bombing people, but mostly the selling.
More than a dozen people were injured Monday when a tour bus carrying 49 passengers crashed near Interstate 80 outside Vacaville, California. California Highway Patrol Officer Ralph Caggiano said 13 individuals were transported from the scene by ambulance with minor to moderate injuries. Caggiano said the crash was reported shortly before 4:30 p.m. in an unincorporated part of Solano County. It appears the bus had just exited the freeway. The bus veered off the highway through a fence and onto another road where it clipped a car. Traffic was moving slowly during Monday evening's commute after the crash took place. The CHP remained on the scene investigating. The driver in the bus accident said, "I'm still nervous." That was her big quote there.
Okay.
I'm still.
What does unincorporated mean? I don't know what that means. I hear that all the time, an unincorporated part of the county. I have no idea what that actually means.
I think it means that it is part of the county, but it's not actually part of any specific city. You get that a lot in rural areas.
So it would be part of Multnomah County, but not like part of Portland?
Right.
Okay, I don't have a better answer to substitute for that one, so I have no choice but to believe you. That is going into the vacuum in my head right now. And
well, there was a time when all the cities in the world didn't just bump up against each other. And I believe that's what you're talking about. When you get into more rural areas, you actually have stretches in between city limits.
All right. So it's sort of a topographical packing peanut.
Yes, exactly. Okay. It's like the peanut butter between the slices of bread.
Somebody's noting, by the way, that shadow inventory follows you home and sniffs your hair while you sleep.
Like a scary clown.
Yes. Yeah. You're thinking of Shadow Stevens, sir, but I understand the mistake. And he says, and then I don't get this. He says, also, I hate you both for the child humping story. What did we do? We're just the conduit.
I'm passing it along.
The messenger, the message.
We didn't hump any children.
Seriously. I mean, you know, I wasn't even home. Here's Don Taylor.
Philadelphia, Pennsylvania is starting a no smoking zone, which is basically everything, everywhere. Secondhand smoke is bad for kids and others, they say, who use the city's outdoor and indoor recreational facilities. So Philadelphia's Mayor Nutter, that's his name.
Really?
Mayor Nutter.
Okay.
Has executed an executive order which makes those places smoke free in time for summer.
Hey, do you think the name of the product Fluffer Nutter is supposed to sound pornographic?
No.
Okay.
I think it was coined before we coined the term fluffer to reply for.
All right.
Sharman Knight, who is your woman on the street in Philadelphia, said, "It just seems like every part of the world is saying no, don't smoke here." She said while she was taking a smoke break outside her office.
I couldn't tell what side of the story she was on there. She was doing a very good job of being unbiased.
Apparently she's a smoker.
Okay. And her name is Charmaine?
Sharman.
It's hard to imagine she's a smoker.
The city of Philadelphia recently added public recreation centers, playgrounds, and public pools to lists of places you can't smoke. The goal is to keep children away from secondhand smoke and prevent them from seeing adults smoking.
Really?
Yes.
So we can no longer even see things that we don't want other people to do.
No.
That's
no.
Right.
Apparently, youth smoking is something of a problem in Philadelphia. A Department of Public Health study conducted last year found 1 in 14 high school students smoke every day.
Well, let's be honest. People in Philadelphia are basically dirtbags. I mean, it's like there's no... And I say that with love. Those are my people. But I mean, really, let's not you and I have any illusions. They're real tool users there. I mean, they really are. They're a bunch of gum chewers in that city.
Giridhar Malia is the Director of Planning and Policy for the Philadelphia Department of Public Health, and she says, when kids see adults smoking, they tend to perceive it as safer and maybe more acceptable than it actually is. That's one of the main reasons we want to put this policy in place.
It doesn't really sound like a proper Philadelphia story, though, because you're not using the phrase, use guys, a lot. You need to just throw that in occasionally and then just scratch your junk every now and again.
So to get the word out, they're posting signs and handing out wallet cards at more than 200 pools, rec centers, ball fields, and even parking lots of those places. And offering free counseling and nicotine replacement therapy. So at smokefreephilly.org.
You guys get out of here. I'm going to make with the chin music or something like that.
You know, I've been to Philadelphia and knew a couple of people. They don't really talk like that.
Really? Maybe it's just the guys from Philadelphia. Maybe it's just the guys that ended up like in that house of dudes where I lived.
Maybe.
And it could be because they were largely drunk. I mean, they were drunk or stoned most of the time.
I mean, Scott Weinberg's from Philadelphia, and he kind of talks like that. But
yeah.
The other people I knew, they're not really sound.
No, and of course, it was all one family. It was like the Beach Boys of Philadelphia. It was like all one family and like some friend of theirs, and they just sat around. They sat around just like sorting their weed on a gatefold Yes album, and then watching Extreme Championship Wrestling and punching each other in the face. So it was maybe not a representative sampling
maybe
of Philadelphia.
Not.
Yeah, it's hard to say, I guess.
Which is like the cradle of democracy or something, isn't it?
It's the city of brotherly love, Don. Here's Don Taylor at the news desk.
Let's do our science.
Here's your Science on the March, brought to you by. There we go. Squires Electric. Find out more about them at SquiresElectric.com or Facebook.com/SquiresElectric. You can also call them at 503-252-1609. That is 503-252-1609. If it has to do with wires or wiring in your home or office, they can make things better for you. They can solve your, maybe not all your problems. And I would say probably the overwhelming majority. I mean, I would probably upward of 90% of the problems that are affecting you involving electricity or electrical apparatus, they can at least minimize. I mean, they can reduce it, I would say, to a substantial degree, maybe not entirely eradicate it. I mean, it's like if you're being attacked by some sort of, I don't know, like some sort of a hyper-electric creature from beyond Alpha Centauri, then maybe not. But, I mean, they could maybe get a little help. I mean, maybe not solve it altogether. You know, if it's like marriage problems, I don't know. Or, you know, like something to do with, like, I don't know, like how to make a bisque properly. Probably not, but I wouldn't rule it out because they're smart folks, and they've got knowledge that I can only guess at. I mean, we've had Joe Squires in the studio. I mean, really, and I've said this, and if you weren't listening to the Rick Emerson Show, you may have missed this, but he literally sat in the studio and in the space of like 9 minutes, like explained like in sort of terms that were crude and simple enough that Dawn and I could understand it, like how nuclear power works, and then like what happens when there's a meltdown, like let's say in Japan. I mean, within about 10 minutes, he actually explained...
And how nuclear submarines actually work, how they power up and how they go.
And how you might solve some sort of a problem of unchecked nuclear acceleration or something bad. I mean, to the extent that I think I probably could have at least taken a shot at explaining it to, like, maybe an enfeebled 5-year-old and maybe gotten it across to some degree. So that's, I'm just saying they didn't just fall off the bumpkin truck. They know what they're doing. So you can contact Squires Electric at 503-252-1609 or Facebook.com/SquiresElectric or SquiresElectric.com. If it has to do with wires or wiring in your home or business, whether that is an upgrade, an installation, a repair, whether it has to do with making sure that you are prepared for the next inspection that might come through your home or business, they can make sure that you are good to go and that you get it done right and right the first time. It's 503-252-1609. They are the proud sponsors of this, your Science of the March. Here's Dawn Taylor.
You know, I've heard you reference this bumpkin truck a few times now. I'm assuming this is a truck full of bumpkins.
Yes. Well, how do you think they get to your tent? Do you think that you allow those people to drive?
Is that where it's going? Does it transport the bumpkins from town to town?
Well, yeah.
Oh, okay. I was wondering why you would fill a truck full of bumpkins.
There's no cabbage patch, Dawn.
Okay.
Where did you think bumpkins came from?
I thought they just kind of grew organically in bumpkinish areas.
No, there's a farm.
Oh. And then they just sort of dispense them outward into the world.
Off the bumpkin truck.
Oh.
It's like the lunch truck, but it's not filled with lunch.
Oh.
You know what it's filled with?
Bumpkins?
Bumpkins.
Mm. Nice. Ford Motor will announce today that its research team in Aachen, Germany, has developed a car seat with 6 sensors that can monitor a driver's heart by its electrical impulses. Such a seat, if brought to market, could help heart patients monitor their health and provide an early warning of a heart attack. It's the latest among several Ford health and wellness initiatives that could enable cars to be an extension of medical self-monitoring for people dealing with chronic conditions such as weak hearts, allergies, diabetes, and other maladies. Pim Vanderjagt, managing editor...
Who is frightening.
Managing director of Ford's European Research Center, said, with the aging population and this interest in health and wellness, there could be an interest in this type of technology. While there are portable heart rate monitors for runners, bicyclists, and other athletes, the beauty of Ford's system is there's nothing to hook up, he says. It saves people a lot of time. The heart monitoring car seat comes a week after Ford said it's working on in-car systems that would let motorists keep track of other health issues such as glucose levels for diabetics and pollen levels for asthmatics from displays on the car's dashboard.
That was my scabies today.
As for a heart monitor, there are plenty of details to be worked out. The system is still being refined to handle different sized motorists and issues such as different types of clothing. A few years ago, Volvo had a heartbeat detector in some models aimed at remotely telling drivers whether an intruder was hiding inside their parked car at night, but it got few takers.
Is that a real problem in Germany? You get into your car and there's just some guy with a machete in the back seat?
Well, Volvo's in Sweden, isn't it?
Well, it doesn't mean... I didn't know that it means that they were rolling it out in Sweden. It sounded like this was all taking place in Germany, much like Toyota might introduce a feature in America.
Well, that was Ford. They were just mentioning that Volvo had this thing a few years ago.
Well, it seems like that's even less a problem in Sweden. Aren't people in Sweden just busy just sitting around on a chalet somewhere and they're just, like, I don't know, drinking out of a champagne flute and
eating chocolate?
Being blonde?
I guess. I mean, sometimes they hide in each other's cars, maybe to play pranks.
I was going to say, but isn't it just to take them to a fabulous party? Hello, it is I, Hans. We are going to a party. There will be snow bunnies.
Maybe that's the thing. You're going to a fabulous party and you don't want somebody, like, sneaking along in your backseat. That's to keep the lesser people from sneaking along to your fabulous party.
Okay.
Yeah. Lots of llama droppings helped the ancient Inca build a large empire, the largest empire ever to exist in the Americas, according to a new study. Human populations took off and developed into complex societies in the Andes by switching from hunter-gathering to agriculture centered on maize, according to research published in the June issue of the journal Antiquity. Llama poop helped fertilize that crucial crop. Alex Chepstow Lusty, a paleoecologist.
Are you really sounding words out?
A paleoecologist. I've never seen that word before.
But those are two words that you already knew.
But it's not two words. It's all crammed together into one word, and I had to figure paleoecologist.
Okay.
From the French Institute for Andean Studies in Lima, Peru, told Discovery that the leap occurred 2,700 years ago and was made possible by a huge availability of animal excrement. Organic fertilizers enabled corn to be cultivated at very high altitudes, allowing the Inca to settle and flourish. Because the Inca language has no written form, it has long been considered the only major Bronze Age civilization without a written language, and due to the destruction of their heritage by the Spanish, the details of their meteoric rise have remained a mystery. Chepstow Lusty found reliable witnesses to reconstruct the extraordinary plant breeding event, which might be the basis of the Inca Empire. These were pollen and mites buried in layers of mud on the floor of Lake Marcachoca in the Cusco region of the Peruvian Andes. So basically, similar to rings in the trunk of a tree, each layer of sediment represents a fixed period of time. They were able to dig down six layers and analyze 4,200-year-old sediment. And they found lots of llama poop. So,
here's what I was thinking of while you were reading that story. You know what somebody needs to do? You know, every year they do the corn maze, you know, like out on like Sovie Island or whatever? Okay, somebody, and so then I was thinking, I was tying this into Peru, where there are the Nazca Lines. And the Nazca Lines, of course, are these gigantic, I mean, they're just, I think they're half a mile across at some places, drawings on the ground of, you know, creatures, you know, monkeys and spiders and whatever.
As shown to us by Eric Von Daniken. Chariots of the Gods?
No. Eric Von Daniken. I thought you were doing like an Indy 4 reference there, and I was wondering why you were doing that. No. Yeah, and they're only visible from the sky, so there's a whole question of like how could they possibly have made them. But combining these two ideas, a form or shape which is only really truly visible from above, and the corn maze, somebody in Sovie Island, maybe one of our listeners, maybe one of the hipper, that is to say, hepper among you out there, you know what you need to do this fall? A Billy Maze. There you go.
Yeah.
See what I did there?
Yes.
Billy Mays.
Billy Mays.
You want to talk about a thing that would be all over FARC like in like 30 seconds? Somebody in Sovie Island, a Billy Mays. And it would be him giving a big thumbs up, only visible from the sky. Do it.
Yes.
There you go. Right. That's Rick Emerson's idea right here. That's Tuesday, May 24th. I came up with that.
When robots talk to each other, Rick Emerson, they're not generally using language as we think of it, with words to communicate both concrete and abstract concepts. Now Australian researchers are teaching a pair of robots to communicate linguistically like humans by inventing new spoken words, a lexicon that the roboticists can teach to other robots to generate an entirely new language.
So they're going to be like those twins that just are on that YouTube video talking to each other for like an hour in the kitchen, except it's just going to be like kill, 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 meatbag, kill.
Yeah. So let's our rundown here. Human-like skin, learning how to poke each other with sticks and punch each other really hard, punch people really hard. Learning how to lie to us and sneak around and roll up into little balls and roll away really fast. And now they can talk to each other in a language we don't understand.
And they can teach it to other robots.
Yeah.
That's great. Wonderful.
Yeah, we should really be doing this.
Yeah.
Ruth Schultz and her colleagues at the University of Queensland and Queensland University of Technology call their robots the Lingo Droids. The robots consist of a mobile platform equipped with a camera, laser rangefinder, and sonar for mapping and obstacle avoidance. The robots also carry a microphone and speakers for audible communication between them. It's just wrong. They said, basically, as a way of explaining it, this article says, say all of a sudden you woke up somewhere with your memory completely wiped, not knowing any language, and then you meet another person who's in the exact same situation as you. What do? Well, you invent random words to describe where you are now, point at the ground, tell the words of the other person, establish a connection, and begin creating words for things. And that's what the Lingo droids do. If one of the robots finds itself in an unfamiliar area, it'll make up a word to describe it, choosing a random combination from a set of syllables. It then communicates that word to other robots that it meets, thereby defining the name of a place.
They should totally do this, but they should make all the robots talk like Don King. They should just put a ification at the end of like every fourth word for no reason.
They also teach the robots to play games with each other to reinforce the language. For example, one robot might tell the other robot, Kuzo. And then both robots will race to where they think Kuzo is. When they meet at or close to the same place, that reinforces the connection between the word and the location. And of course, from Kuzo, one robot can ask the other about a place it just came from, resulting in words for more abstract concepts like direction and distance.
Okay, you're freaking me out. You gotta quit reading this. It's okay. Wigging me. All right. Is that it?
Yeah, that's all of our scary, scary science.
All right, there's your science, that is to say, the robot apocalypse on the march for Tuesday, May 24th, 2011, brought to you by Squires Electric, who will be humanity's last best stand against tyranny. That is 503-252-1609 for Squires Electric. Squires Electric. The thin steel line between us and our metallic overlords. All right, there you go. Coming up next hour at RickEmersonShow.com, the Rick Emerson Radio Program today, Clergy Watch, Religious Nutcase Watch. We'll do a recap of last night's season finale of House and which guest of the Rick Emerson Radio Program is now going to be a Nieman Fellow at Harvard.
Oh.
Find out next hour.
Is it me?
RickEmersonShow.com. Yes.
I'm not a guest.
You're not a guest. Oh. No.
Now I'm sad. The warm weather is here, and the official construction season has begun in Portland, Oregon. The Oregon Department of Transportation says more than 40 project areas will span from Hood River to Portland and the northern coastline. An ODOT press release cautions drivers, staying safe with all those construction workers on the road means drivers must pay complete attention to the driving task, especially in the transition zone before the work area. An inattentive driver is the most common cause of work zone crashes.
I really have to say that is true, because just in the area surrounding our studios here, it's like, here's the thing about the construction in this area. First, they're filming two different shows here at once. They're filming Grimm and they're filming Gone. And they're both happening within like a block of where we are right now. And then it's like every street around us is being torn up. And then, you know, I don't know, they're doing something. They're tearing it up and they're putting something where something else was, and then they're repaid. But like, if you come, like when I come here from Beaverton on the days I do Outlook Portland, if you're coming up like Water Avenue or whatever that is, every single day it's a different section of streets that are closed. It's like the combination, it's like some sort of weird maze that constantly realigns itself so that you can never really find your way out. Every day it's a different street that is closed.
Yeah, and it ends up like playing sort of this live action first person version of Pac-Man.
Totally.
Where you're like driving up a street and then you make a turn and it's like, oh no, it's blinky, and you have to turn around and go the other way and then go around the block, and it's yeah.
Yeah, so if I was just sort of doing the muscle memory thing of driving, I would have plowed through like 70 of those flag guys by now.
Let's see. They're going to be paving the top deck of the Fremont Bridge, and that will close the bridge for up to 4 weekends. They're going to replace the Interstate 5 Iowa Street viaduct near the Terwilliger Curves.
Now, where's the Fremont Bridge?
Which I think
Bridge?
Is what they're already doing. The Fremont Bridge, isn't that the one that goes across over on the 405? Isn't that the 405 bridge? I might be wrong. Anyway, they're doing that work on the Terwilliger Curves, which will require double nighttime lane and ramp closures. They're building a pedestrian bridge over the I-5 at Gibbs Street. I don't know where that is.
Gibbs is by John's Landing.
Okay, and that's going to require lane closures, ramp closures, and rolling blockades.
Okay,
at night.
That actually makes a lot of sense, though, because that place is, I can't tell you, by Gibbs is completely dangerous, because there's like one of those weird intersections. I don't know why they do this. I mean, it's convenient for me as a driver, because they do it down here by Grand. They do it by Grand and like, I don't know. It's like Grand, and if you're heading like if you're heading to like MLK, and you're going to where like the Goodwill or whatever it is. But there's this intersection there where there is a stop sign. There's a stop sign right there, and yet underneath it, it says cars do not need to stop before making right hand turn. It says it on the stop sign. You do not need to turn, and you actually can't go forward. Like, the only thing you can do is turn right. So it's not like there's another option. All you can do is turn right. So they've put up a stop sign, and then below, on the stop sign itself, affixed another sign saying, cars do not need to stop. And so it's completely bizarre. And there's one of those at Gibbs, too, where the traffic only stops in one direction. But the other direction, and I'm not talking about where there's a right-hand turn. I mean, like, cars passing each other, but they only one of those lanes has to stop. I mean, it's like, I'm surprised that because I used to live right there, and I'm surprised I wasn't, killed like the first day. I mean, it makes no sense at all. So I am, and the Terwilliger curves, don't even get me started. The thing about the Terwilliger curves is, I don't know whether that whole thing is on some downward grade, like if you're coming back from Beaverton or whatever, and I'm so glad that I've lived here long enough and I can now become a guy who complains about specific stretches of road. It is impossible to drive back from Beaverton to Portland on the Terwilliger curves without inadvertently going 70 miles an hour. I don't know. The whole thing is just angled somehow, I think, to where you just speed without even realizing it. I have never once come back from Beaverton at anything approaching, like a legal limit. I'm always way, way, way over it because it's. I think the whole thing must be on some downward slope. So that's like that place is just a death trap to begin with. You're all going to die if you take that road.
They're also building a new bridge and widening the highway on 213, Oregon 213, near the 205, which requires a four-day highway closure. They're widening the 26 between 185th and Cornell, which will mean nighttime lane and ramp closures. And they're doing rehabilitation work on the Oregon City Westland Arch Bridge, and that will be closed to all traffic.
Okay.
So, yay! Wonderful. Welcome to summer.
Hooray.
Hooray.
All right.
An Illinois interstate ramp was closed Sunday afternoon for more than 5 hours after a semi-truck hauling cattle overturned, killing some of the livestock and leaving others to roam the road. The semi-truck hauling cattle crashed and flipped about 11:15 a.m. on an eastbound ramp. Police said some of the cattle were killed as they fell off the ramp after the crash. Others were roaming around on the off-ramp. We do have some livestock that perished, and some are still alive in the trailer, said Trooper Ricardo Sandoval. The state police are trying to round up the livestock. Police were on the scene, and the ramp remained closed into rush hour in the evening. And there was no indication that the trucker was injured, and it was not immediately known why the crash happened.
Hey, this makes me think of this. Is there like some sort of a music festival or some sort of a gathering of perhaps hot gothic babes that uses the name Deadstock? If not, somebody ought to make a thing called Deadstock.
There should be.
And have that idea.
I'd be surprised if there wasn't. California preacher Harold Camping said yesterday his prophecy that the world would end was off by 5 months because Judgment Day actually will come on October 21st. I don't believe him.
What?
Yeah, all of the
21st is already passed. What month?
October.
Oh, October.
All the gazillion dollars that he spent on this thing, it turns out he was just 5 months off.
He didn't carry the one.
He predicted the 200 million Christians would be taken to heaven Saturday before the earth was destroyed. Said he felt terrible when his doomsday prediction did not come true. He left home and took refuge in a motel with his wife. His independent ministry, Family Radio International, spent millions of dollars, some of it from donations made by followers, and the rest of it coming from where?
I am officially a huge fan of this guy.
On more than 5,000 billboards and 20 RVs plastered with the Judgment Day message.
Good for him.
But Camping said he's now realized the apocalypse will actually come 5 months after May 21st, the original date he predicted.
That's wonderful.
October 21st is the day the globe is going to be consumed by a giant fireball.
Okay, how can anybody be angry at that guy? I mean, really, I find it impossible to have any malice in my heart for him at all. Now I might find other reasons to dislike him, but just based upon this, I mean, his stock is going way up with me. His tote board is rising and rising, ever higher to the sky. Excellent. Good for you, sir.
Tim LaHaye, co-author of the best-selling Left Behind novels about the end times, called Camping's prediction not only bizarre, but 100% wrong. Yes. Tim LaHaye thinks this guy is a crackpot.
Well, and plus that's just illogical, though, for him to be standing here to, I mean, I guess maybe it's not illogical, it's redundant for him to be standing here today and going, that prediction was just 100% wrong, like to be saying it after the fact. It seems like that's a bit of a say, you know, if you really want to impress me, you say it like last year, don't say it today.
He wrote on his website, leftbehind.com, "While it may be in the near future, many signs of our time certainly indicate so, but anyone who thinks they know the day and the hour is flat out wrong."
Have you seen so here's the thing about Left Behind. Left Behind is Kirk Cameron in it, and it's okay, but then there are many, many sequels, all of them bad, and everyone worse than the one that preceded it. The worst of the series is, I think, the third movie in, and it's like, which is called, like, Throne of Darkness or something, or Crown of something, or pointy something or other. Anyway, but it's the third one in the series, and it's got Corbin Burnson and Mr. T.
Oh.
And it's, I swear to God, there's the best single moment in the Left Behind series. And again, not because I mentioned yesterday, and everybody was poking a bit of fun at me, sometimes more than a bit, that I was watching Twilight Eclipse, which I'm now like 15 minutes from the end, by the way. I'm convinced that...
Obviously, you're drawing it out because
well, I want to make it last.
Savoring it.
Yeah, well, I have to savor all the abs individually. But I'm sort of a completist, so that's why I had to watch all the Left Behind films. Once I'd seen the first one with Kirk Cameron, it's like, it's like drinking a spittoon, Don. Once you start, you just have to go all the way to the end. So I was watching the third Left Behind film, Corbin Burnson and Mr. T. There is the greatest moment, and it's when Mr. T says, I swear to you, he says, I pity the fool, don't know the healing power of Christ.
Aww.
And I think he's actually holding a machine gun while he says it, which is what makes it even better. It really is something. Okay. It's worth watching. I strongly endorse it.
Let's do our entertainment news.
All right, here's your entertainment news for. I'm sorry, we have a little bit of breaking news here.
Oh, okay. We won't do entertainment news.
Well, no. This is, I guess, not entertaining. Probably. Chief Joseph Elementary in North Portland is currently in lockdown at the moment. This is at 12:44 p.m. Pacific time on Tuesday, May 24th, because of a stabbing. Not at the school itself. Apparently, stabbing on North Russet Street in Portland has led to a lockdown at Chief Joseph Elementary School.
The stabber is running around somewhere?
There is no additional information given at this time, and I don't wish to alarm the populace. All I know is what has been reported now by both K2 and Fox 12, which is that stabbing on North Russet Street in Portland led to a lockdown at Chief Joseph Elementary. Ba-da-da-ba-ba-ba. So, there you go. Here's your entertainment news for Tuesday.
Can I sponsor the entertainment news?
What do you mean?
I mean, can I sponsor the entertainment news?
Like you, Don Taylor?
No, me, my company, my business.
Yes.
Oh, okay. Today's entertainment news is sponsored by Polidori Chocolates.
Well, wait a minute. Hold on. Now, by sponsor, I thought you meant can you pay for placement of your product or business?
I'll pay you something. I'll slip you a little.
This isn't one of those things where I get paid in knowledge or some gay thing like that, is it?
In the warmth of your heart?
Seriously. No, you're paid in experience.
I'll pay you in chocolate.
Okay.
Okay. Polidori Chocolates. You can find them at polidorichocolates.com. They are made by hand with love and immense dedication to my craft by me, Don Taylor. Currently on our site, you can get the Seven Deadly Sins chocolate collection, which is... 8 truffles, 1 for each of the 7 deadly sins, plus 1, and also the Choconomicon, which is a collection of...
which just sounds awesome.
Of 8 truffles in 4 flavors based on the writings of H.P. Lovecraft, including the truffle over Innsmouth, which is key lime with a little bit of sea salt, Elder Joy, which is sort of an adult version of your popular candy bar treat with white chocolate and coconut and rum. And the Penguins of Lang, the albino Penguins of Lang, which is white chocolate with mint.
Is that named after a thing?
Yeah, the Penguins of Lang were, basically when you saw the albino Penguins of Lang, you were clutched by a primitive dread almost sharper than the worst of your reasoned fears.
Okay.
But here, you're really just delighting in tasty chocolate. Also, homemade marshmallows, which are nothing like the marshmallows that you've ever bought in a bag. You can find them at polidorichocolates.com. Help support me, Don Taylor, and Legion of News.
Somebody, by the way, says, I sent an email to showpony@rickemerson.com yesterday asking about chocolates. Don never replied. Why does she hate my money? It's not that she hates your money. She hates you, sir.
I think it was the guy, though. I think he actually placed it, unless I'm thinking of someone else.
It's because you're Greek. That's why.
Oh, it's the Greek guy.
I didn't want to come out right out and say it, but that's why.
Okay. I'll respond to you after the show.
Yes. Okay. You stink of lamb. Here's Don Taylor.
Katy Perry and Russell Brand have placed their 4,500-square-foot Mediterranean-style Los Feliz, California home on the market. They are asking for $3.4 million for the property, which they purchased in 2009. Mad Men actress Christina Hendricks told the Daily Mail's You magazine that her breasts are real. It's so bizarre. People are constantly asking if my breasts are real or fake, she said. They're so obviously real that anyone who's ever seen or touched a breast would know. She's married to actor Jeffrey Aaron.
Science has come a long way. I mean, technology has really given us... I mean, and also, really, if you think about it logically, Because, you know, this is a thing. I think this is not a syllogism. It's a thing like that. What is the philosoph? Not sophistry. Maybe it is sophistry. Well, there's a sort of logical fallacy that people... There's a thing. It's some crap they taught me at debate camp that I've forgotten about like decades ago. But when people say, well, you know, you
debate
can...
Debate camp?
Yes. When people say you can
there's
always...
There's a story there, isn't you, there?
No, not really. I mean, it's a sad story just filled with tears and lameness. And sunflower seeds, always. But, you know, people say, well, you can always tell fake boobs. Well, but if you think about it, that is reverse engineering the outcome. I mean, by definition... You can only tell the fake boobs, and so if one was executed well enough, you would not be able to tell. So that's like a self-supporting claim when people say they can always spot fake breasts. What that really means is you can only spot or easily spot the fake breasts. If one actually it was created with enough craft and care, you would not be able to tell. So I don't know that necessarily goes, because here's the thing we were always told, which may in fact have been true at one point, about Anna Nicole Smith was that she didn't have any, she didn't have implants. When she was a guest girl, that was all the stories about her was like that she was, you know, because she was like 100 feet tall. And so it was just that she was just like kind of this big girl who had the, you know, big curves and whatever. And so, you know, I'm glad that she took the time to clarify this because it's, you know, the modern marvels are such that that could be the result of man-made engineering. One never knows.
A St. Louis judge has given the go-ahead for Warner Brothers to proceed with its release this Friday of The Hangover Part 2, dismissing a tattoo artist's request for an injunction because of Mike Tyson-inspired ink on Ed Helms' face. The studio said, "We're gratified by the court's decision, which will allow the highly anticipated film to be released on schedule this week around the world. The plaintiff's failed attempt to enjoin Hangover 2 in order to try and extract a massive settlement payment from Warner Brothers was highly inappropriate and unwarranted." Basically what happened was... The character that Ed Helms plays gets a tattoo on his face that looks like Mike Tyson's face. A tattoo guy claims the studio violated his copyright. He did the facial tattoo on Mike Tyson by using a similar one on Helms. He wakes up in the movie after a night of partying in Thailand with Mike Tyson's tattoo on his face. The tattoo scene has been prominently featured in trailers, on posters, and in other marketing and promotional materials. The studio denied any wrongdoing and insisted that its use of the tattoo is covered by the First Amendment. Danny Glover is going to star this fall in the USA series Psych, where he will play a minor league team manager who guest stars. He's going to seek help from Sean, the character in Psych, after the team's hitting coach dies. Former baseball player Wade Boggs will also appear in the episode.
I have never seen Psych. All I know is that it has Dule Hill from The West Wing.
I watched it the first season, and then I've seen a few episodes since, and it's cute. You know, and Dule Hill is always terrific.
What is the premise of Psych?
The premise is that the main character is played by this guy, James Rode. He's got some kind of like hyper ability to see detail and to understand what all of those details he sees means. This was trained into him from childhood by his father, Corbin Burnson, who is a policeman. So the thing is, he ends up starting a private investigation agency, saying that he's psychic.
So he passes himself off.
Right.
Okay, I was going to say that's a really vague and amorphous skill, but
yeah.
He passes himself off as psychic when really he's ultra observant.
Right.
That's interesting.
And
okay.
Dule Hill is his best friend from childhood who is in the business with him and tends to run around a lot going, "Damn it, Sean, no, we can't do that. Oh, you're going to get me in trouble."
It's almost like he's and I don't mean this in the television sense, I mean in the literal sense, it's almost like he is a mentalist. He's one of those faith healing guys that really is just like picking up on minor details. He's like a John Edwards Dick.
Yeah.
Who just, you know, I'm getting an R. Is there an R? That one of those guys.
And he makes money by helping the police and pretending he's psychic.
Okay.
Yeah. Buffy the Vampire Slayer producer Joss Whedon and not filmmaker Kenneth Branagh directed the last scene after the credits in the current film Thor. It's a sequence which featured Erik Selvig's meeting with Nick Fury. That would be Stellan Skarsgård and Samuel L. Jackson. Skarsgård told Empire Magazine, "I flew over there and went down into a basement and talked to Sam for a couple of minutes and went back." That was with the director Joss Whedon, who's doing The Avengers. When asked about further details on The Avengers, Skarsgård said he knows what's going to happen to my character, but that's really all I know. And that's all your entertainment news.
Excellent. There's your entertainment news for Tuesday, May 24th, 2011. Don't forget to join us next hour for the Rick Emerson Radio Program. That's at rickemersonshow.com, where you, yes, you, can be entertained for the low cost of just 32 cents a day. You can join Tyler, Mena, and...
Richie. Kyle.
No, no.
Steve.
Lisa.
Lisa.
And I actually haven't checked today, so did, I mean, we could be up to our ankles in new subscribers today. I haven't really had a chance to check the thing. So, the log. As of yesterday, I know we had welcomed those three folks to the, we'd held them close to the, and fast to the Rick Emerson bosom. So you can find out more at rickemersonshow.com. Don't forget, your first week is free. And then after that, you'll probably forget to cancel it, and then we'll get your money. So that's rickembersonshow.com. Next hour, we got Clergy Watch, Religious Nutcase Watch. We'll also recap last night's season finale of House, and we'll talk about one of our good friends who is going to be spending a year at Harvard. Who is it? Find out next hour at rickembersonshow.com. Here's Don Taylor.
A Northeast Ohio couple found themselves in trouble after they rafted a flood-swollen river without life preservers and then lied about it afterwards. 20-year-old Grace Nash and 22-year-old Bruce Crawford pleaded guilty to misdemeanor misconduct during an emergency. Searchers spent hours looking for them last month after they were spotted on the Grand River. They made it to land, but lied to an official about being in the water and said they had actually chosen to raft voluntarily while the river was a rampaging, flood of danger. The judge sentenced them to stand in a tiny swimming pool while wearing life jackets and handing out water safety brochures Saturday at a festival in Painesville, Ohio. They chose the pool punishment and community service in lieu of 60 days in jail.
Okay. Somebody's seen too many David E. Kelly shows.
A Pennsylvania Popeye's shift manager is in jail after allegedly fondling...
Popeye's ship?
Shift.
Oh, okay.
Shift.
All right.
A Pennsylvania Popeye's... The chicken place.
Okay.
Shift manager is in jail after allegedly fondling his underage employees. On Monday at 3:15 p.m., police arrested 50-year-old Eduardo Tomasek during his shift at the Popeyes restaurant. Authorities say that after a two-month investigation, they believe Tomasek fondled and inappropriately touched at least three female employees between the ages of 15 and 16. He also allegedly supplied them with gifts and money. Tomasek was arraigned and sent to Bucks County Prison in lieu of $250,000 bail. He's charged with indecent assault, unlawful contact with minors, and other related offenses.
They did not give him the option of standing in a kiddie pool.
No, he just...
And it's like, it just sucks. Like, you're 15, you're 16, so your life kind of blows anyway. And then you're working at, like, a fast food joint, and then it's like there's some skeezy guy who's just all grubby and portly coming up and just, like, putting his mitts all over you and just, that's... It's one of those things where you just think, well, this job can't get any worse. I guess, what's that? And then you look and there's just some guy trying to cup your area. I mean, that's no, you don't want that. That's no way to spend your days. Jesus.
I wonder how good the gifts and money were, by the way. Because
I don't know.
I can't imagine. He's a shift manager at Popeye's. It's not like, not like he's handing out diamond tennis bracelets.
I thought you meant like how good would it have to be for me to tolerate it.
They're probably really crappy gifts on top of everything else.
Seriously, like 12% off at a Claire's or something.
Yeah, I got you this DVD of Deuce Bigalow.
Buy one, get one free pot merchandise at Spencer's Gifts this week only.
An Iowa woman faces drug charges after police said a Johnson County Sheriff's deputy found a container filled with marijuana in her vagina on Thursday night. Denya Nicole Humphreys, 32, was charged with possession of contraband in a correctional facility. A sheriff's deputy found the marijuana-filled container when Humphreys was being booked at about 10 p.m.
It's contraband with an O.
Yes. She was arrested for drunk driving about 7:10 p.m. A passenger in the car admitted he had marijuana on him and had just shared a joint with her before they were pulled over. The test confirmed she was indeed under the influence of marijuana. So, and apparently had hidden some,
secreted away
in her private area.
In her
nethers.
Yeah. Business there. You got 30 seconds if you want to. We have something short.
No, not really.
Okay.
I think we're done.
Do you suppose that camping? Because somebody knows this. The camping guy is he just? Does he just keep playing out the thread because he figures that he's got to die one of these days? And he just keeps extending it by, like, another 6 months, going, well, like, I gotta snuff it by then, clearly. And then he just keeps living, just keeps getting older and wrinklier and older and wrinklier, and, he just, because it's like, Because first it was like the last time he did this prediction, he said he was off by 5 years. Then he was off by a year. And then at this time, he's only willing to go out like 6.5 months or something.
5 months.
Yeah. So it's like, I wonder if he just keeps scaling it back. Like if he, you know, thinking he's got to be trending towards death sometime soon, you know?
Obviously, he's got a lot more. Maybe he has a lot more followers now. So the money comes in faster.
It's possible. Wait. There we go. Excellent. And on that note, we bring to a conclusion another exciting episode of Legion of News. We come to you live each and every weekday from the studios of the Emerson News Network, high above the Milk Packing District here in glorious Southeast Portland, Oregon. At the news desk, Don Taylor, Advanced Technology Magic, Governor Minister Thomas Gill, Executive Producer Bruce Agler, Chief of Staff is Cheryl Kanakoa. Wow. Coming up next hour at RickEmersonShow.com. It is the Rick Emerson radio program. You can find out more at RickEmersonShow.com, where your first week is free. We thank you for listening. Don't forget, you can get it later on the day via iTunes or as a direct MP3 download here at Cascadia.fm or LegionofNews.com. Have a safe and satisfying Tuesday. We'll see you tomorrow at noon on Wednesday for another episode of Legion of News. Good day to you, sir.